Welcome to Literary Quest, a podcast hosted by us, Vicky and Marissa, where we discuss our favorite in fantasy fiction and hopefully can direct you in your quest to find your next great read. Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Literary Quest. Today we're discussing Berries and Greed by Lily Maine. I will be introducing our characters and location, and Vicky will pick up with our plot. So for our characters, we have Beryl, who is a 35-year-old human female with red hair who was raised by her aunt, Violet, after her parents abandoned her. Violet brought Beryl up in a cult, which worships the Demiurgus, a group of people who emerged from deep within the earth long ago to live on the surface with humans. Though Beryl does not believe in the superiority of the Demiurgus or worship them or buy into the cult's beliefs, she has led a fairly comfortable life within the cult, although she does wonder from time to time if there might be more for her out there. Beryl also has vaginismus, which we'll talk about more when we get into the meat of our podcast. And then we have Greed, who is an early 40s Demiurgus male who is shy and kind and has social anxiety. Though Demiurgus are known for being pretty assertive and dominant, especially sexually, Greed tends to be more submissive and enjoys being praised and dominated, especially sexually. He works as a jeweler. He enjoys getting high, eating all of the things, and has struggled with his self-esteem in the past due to feeling betrayed by his ex and being raised in a large family where he was frequently picked on. Just for reference, Demiurgus generally are a little bit taller than humans when they're in their human form. They have very dark skin. They have a tail. They have little spikes around the crown of their head, around their forehead, and they have frond-like ears that help them pick them up on like sound vibrations, and they have claws as well. This book takes place on Earth in a city environment.
So for our plot, Beryl is a member of the Order of the Greater Beings, although she does not believe in the cult's teachings. She is thankful for the safety that the cult has provided for her and her aunt, but she does not believe that the Demiurgus are gods or greater beings. Despite the cult's worshipping, most of the members have had few interactions with Demiurguses, and it has been years since one came to the cult searching for a mate. So when Greed shows up, it's assumed that he's there looking for a human mate. However, he's actually just looking for a companion. He's been lonely ever since his ex-girlfriend Agma left him and ruined his reputation among their friends. When he arrives, he's ushered inside and is gushed over by the leader of the cult. He starts looking for a way out, but gets dragged along to see all the cult members lined up, hoping he would pick one of them for their mate to be his mate. There's one person not looking at him, though, and it's Beryl. He quickly picks her, and she chooses to have some alone time with him, and when they have the time together, he explains that he's not looking for a sexual relationship, but rather just a companion and a roommate. Beryl, who has always been curious about the outside world, but a little too nervous to leave the cult, agrees to become his roommate. She wants to go out, get a job, and live in the real world, experience life away from the cult. She'll get to have a lot more freedoms than she does now, including, you know, junk food, that sort of stuff. So they agree to live together. Greed provides housing and food without the expectation of anything in return. And Beryl starts to venture out into the city. She gets a job and makes some friends. However, Greed and Beryl have started to develop feelings for each other. Will they act on the feelings, or will their differences and society's expectations keep them apart? Spoilers ahead.
There were so many things that I loved about this book. This is my first read. I know that you've read it before. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
There were a lot of things that I have never read in a book before that showed up in this book, like a female main character with vaginismus who has no desire to have it treated so she can have vaginal penetration. We had a jerk-off instructions scene. I've never read that in a book before. We also had pegging And we have a male main character with a barbed penis that was so long he could suck it. Usually, when our male main characters have penis adaptations, it makes sex more pleasurable for the female main character. This is not the case in this book. There was just a lot. It was exciting.
It was so good. I'm so glad you liked it. 'Cause yeah, when I first read it, I was just, this is it. This has to be, we've got to cover this. And when I was reading it, I already had notes in it and everything.
'Cause
Because I had so many thoughts. But yeah, I love it. Both characters I think are really relatable. You know, we've got Beryl, who, first of all, I love that she's 35 and it's not made a massive deal out of, you know, like, yeah, there's some like, I'm 35, I'm kind of behind in life. But it's not the focus of her character. I feel like a lot of times when we see older female leads, sometimes it's like, oh my God, I'm 35. I'm, you know, an old maid sort of thing, right? But we didn't get that. So I enjoyed that. And also, oh my gosh, greed with his social anxiety. Very relatable. And it's also, I just found it to be a sweet book in general. There's no major conflict, right? There's no enemy out to get them or anything like that. It's just a story of how they slowly fall in love. And it's so sweet and spicy. So.
It was low stakes, which is really nice like read a book and not have tremendous anxiety about your characters like dying or being in mortal danger or something really horrible and traumatic happening to them. It was a low stakes book and it was really sweet. Greed is like peak male character written by a female.
Oh, yeah,
He's
definitely.
just precious and so kind and adorable. And yeah, super terrific. I love what she said about Beryl being 35 and it not being a big deal too, because I feel like you're right. When we do have a female main character that is a little bit older, and you say like 35 is like my age. I don't feel old. And I don't feel like I've missed out on a lot of things or like my life. I love that it's not, again, like the focus of the character. Like she's 35 and there's anxiety about it, which I do feel like you're right, shows up when we have characters who are not like 19. I feel like the female main character in a lot of the fantasy books that we've read over the last few years has been like 20 to 25, maybe, which is fine, but it is nice to have female main characters who are a little bit closer to my age, our age, and it not be like, huh, mid-30s, huh.
You know, I remember that one book we read where somebody was 27 and they were like, well, that's it for me. I will never get married, have no life. I might as well die.
I totally support mid-30s main characters being a thing. Let's do it, fantasy authors. Let's get it out there.
Yes, definitely. So we also see her go through a lot of emotions when she leaves the cult, right? And I think this is relatable to anyone who, well, I guess I've ever been in a cult, but also people leaving, you know, who are indoctrinated into religions and stuff like that as well. So not just specific to cults.
Although I think
But
that you could probably call some religions cults. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. So, you know, we know she struggled to leave to begin with, right? Because she could have left when she was 18 and she stayed because she was comfortable, which that makes sense. Totally get it. She has a house, like a home, all, you know, all of her needs are met. But when she leaves, she also starts feeling angry, right? So she's angry at herself for not leaving earlier. Then she has a moment where she's kind of angry at her aunt for not leaving when, you know, she was dropped off at her doorstep and making her kind of grow up in that environment. But the other thing that I like is that she overcomes it pretty quickly. She'll have these moments of anger and frustration, but she's able to think like clearly about it. So for her aunt, you know, her aunt had problems with drugs in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why her aunt didn't want to leave, because going back out into the real world, she could be tempted by that.
Right.
So when Beryl thinks of that, she's like, okay, you know, I understand. So
yeah,
I appreciate that she thinks through her emotions.
Yes.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that she acknowledges her, I mean, because she's lived in the cult for a long time after she became an adult and just stayed because it was comfortable. And I think this was also like a relatable for situation, not necessarily as it relates to like leaving a cult or religion, although definitely, but if you've been in a relationship, like a romantic relationship with someone who it wasn't like outstanding or terrific, but it also wasn't abusive or awful or it just was, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when you get out of a relationship like that, like that's relatable to me, having been in a relationship for a long time, that it wasn't a terrible relationship, but I'm in a better relationship now and recognize like it could have been better this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's relatable for a lot of people too.
Yeah.
The feelings that she has, like I stayed here and I could have had more. And I like what you said about her kind of thinking through like the reasoning behind why her aunt did the things that she did and living in a cult, even if she didn't believe it, gave her a lot of security. It kept her from being in positions that would make it really risky for her to raise a child, which is what Violet was when she came to her. She was a child.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about pelvic health.
Do it.
So what I really liked about this book was that we had a female main character with vaginismus, and we've seen not necessarily vaginismus show up in books, but in popular media, vaginismus has shown up in a few, like there's a Netflix series where it appeared. And so I think pelvic floor disorders are becoming more talked about, which is terrific, but because we should talk about them. But as a pelvic floor therapist reading this book, I was just so happy to see a main character with a condition like this. So vaginismus is what occurs when your pelvic floor muscles involuntarily contract or spasm in response to penetration. And that can be any kind of penetration, like penetration with a tampon, a speculum, fingers, dildos, penis, any other tools or devices or whatever, anything else that you might put inside of a vagina. The muscles in your pelvic floor contract beyond the person's ability to control. And then any attempts at vaginal penetration are often really painful. So sex can be excruciating, as can visits to the gynecologist for pelvic exams. It can be impossible to wear a tampon or some other type of insertable menstrual device, like a menstrual cup or a disc. You can have primary vaginismus, which occurs when a person has never been able to tolerate penetration. And a lot of times people will discover this when they try to use tampons for the first time and literally cannot. And then you can also have secondary vaginismus, which occurs when a person may have been able to tolerate vaginal penetration in the past, but for a variety of reasons, including like menopause, gynecological surgery or cancer treatment, trauma, childbirth, hormone issues, for a variety of reasons, and sometimes no really spectacular, obvious reason, they become unable to tolerate penetration. And so that's what we're looking at with Beryl in this book. And I see this a lot as a pelvic floor therapist. And so here's your PSA. Sex, pelvic exams, tampon use, those should not be painful. Sex should not be painful unless you've negotiated pain with your partner as part of your sexual exploits. And so if you're having initial or deep pain with penetration, or if orgasm hurts, there are treatment options that exist, and you can totally see a pelvic floor therapist for these conditions. There's also a really great short film called Tightly Wound. It's animated, and it talks about the person who illustrated it, who also had vaginismus and the things that she experienced and the treatment options that she sought. So there are tons of resources out there, but don't ever let anyone tell you that it's normal for sex to be painful. You, at a minimum, sex should not hurt. At a maximum, it should be pleasurable. if that's what you're into. But sex should not be painful. That was my soapbox. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. So what I love about Beryl's character is that she has vaginismus and she decides intentionally not to get it treated because she doesn't feel like she needs to. She says, one, I didn't think it was something necessarily needed fixing, seeing as I wasn't all that interested in being penetrated anyway. And there was more to life than having a dick shoved in you. And two, I preferred oral sex. I love this attitude. Our culture is super obsessed with penis and vagina sex. And a lot of times that gets viewed as like the quote goal for sexual encounters. And so I love that we have a character who says, absolutely not. I am not interested in that. I don't feel like I need to get this fixed because I don't want it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think we also see, sadly, in some of the books, you mentioned some previous partners that we're basically like, well, no, I'm not going to be with you simply yeah. because of that, which is one of those things. Well, clearly you don't like me,
right?
Basically for me.
Yes, know. Exactly. So. Or she talks about having partners in the past who are like, well, it won't happen with my dick.
Oh, yes. Their magic penis.
Yes. So. Your magic penis that just magically cures pelvic floor disorders. Just a little bit won't be a problem. Yes, it will be.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah. So I like that she addresses that too, because again, that's something that you see in real life with people who have vaginismus. They have partners who leave the relationship because they cannot have penetrative sex with them, or willingly are asking or letting their partners be in pain during sex mm-hmm. for their own pleasure, right?
It is very, I mean, our society just in general is very focused on male pleasure.
Yes, male pleasure is centered a lot of times when we talk about sexual, even, I mean, so I've been doing research on like the feminine wash industry, because it's the biggest scam we've ever been sold. I mean, it's not the biggest. Health insurance is a big scam. Like, there's a lot of scams out there. But feminine wash for a long time, like, and even now, I would say, the intention behind that is like, you should buy this so that your man will enjoy the way that your vagina smells or vulva, or to keep your partner from stepping out on you, you should use XYZ douche, which, by the way, it was Lysol. People used to use Lysol to douche with, which, hello, chemical burns. That's terrible. But that was the way that those products were sold for a long time. Like, if you want your partner to stay with you or to make your partner happy, your vulva and vagina should smell like a piña colada or pine fresh. So for, you know, a very long time, male pleasure has been centered when it comes to sex. And part of what I like about Beryl's stance on not seeking out or being interested in penetration is that it, I feel like, kind of makes the approach to sex more equitable.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you take penetration off the table, you end up focusing more on like external stimulation, specifically on clitoral stimulation, which for the majority of people with vulvas is necessary to achieve orgasm. Like 80% of people with vulvas require clitoral stimulation in some form to achieve orgasm. And the majority of penis and vagina sex positions don't get you direct clitoral stimulation. And so when you take that off the table, I think it allows you to approach sex in a more equitable way by focusing on external stimulation and specifically on clitoral stimulation.
Yeah. I think it was so interesting to see this in a book, and I really did love her attitude on it too. Just, I don't really like being penetrated anyway. So
yeah,
you know.
I thought it was great. Just because you have a hole doesn't mean you want it fucked. Like, I think it's important that we ask people what they're actually interested in when it comes to sexual contact. And so there are people who really enjoy penetration And then there are other people who don't enjoy penetration, but the assumption a lot of times is that penetration is the goal, and that should not be the case.
Right.
Having a good time should be the goal. Again, thank you for coming to my TED Talk. I know that that was a lot. I could talk about pelvic floor disorders all day long because they are so under talked about and not known well about and have such a tremendous impact on a person's quality of life.
It's an important part of your health that for men and women, that isn't really touched on too much. You know, like if you go to a gynecologist, a lot of times you have to specifically ask for it, I feel like, versus them just offering it up or kind of being almost a secondary thought. Oh, well, hey, there's this pelvic floor physical therapist, you know. Down the road. Yeah.
Part of it is also with that, like specifically in the United States and particularly in the South. I don't know if it's necessarily exactly like this and where you're at, but in the South, like people just don't talk about what's happening in their pants. Are you having problems with peeing on yourself when you don't want to? Has anyone ever asked you about it? A lot of times my patients are bringing it up first with their providers and not the other way around. So, when it comes to things like talking about having pain with sex, a lot of times it requires a lot of personal advocacy. Because your doctors may not ever ask about it. We
Yeah.
hope that they do, but they may not. Agreed is precious and adorable, and I love him.
Yes, I love him so much. His little fronds on his ears that like
Ugh.
flutter when he's nervous or whatever, and
Yes.
he, oh,
And
it's
his little spikes on his head that wave and oh. He's just so cute. I'm super glad that there is a picture of him on the cover of this book because I did have a hard time picturing all of the features of the demiurgus, like the ear fronds
Oh,
and
yeah.
the spikes and the little smile creases.
Yeah, I was especially happy that they had that on the cover because I had a hard time with those smile creases.
I did too. Lily Maine is so good at writing monsters. She has another series. It's like post-apocalyptic monster romance, and it's terrific too. The monsters that she's written in that series are adorable, and she has written like some of the hottest male sex scenes I have read. She's so good.
She did Soul Eater, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that was good.
Wind Soul Eater. Oh my gosh, it's terrific. She's got it's just a whole series of stuff, and it's so good.
There's also a second in this series out that I didn't realize until today.
Yeah, it popped up when I finished this book. It's about Noonie and the human that works with Beryl's friend Corva as an event planner, I think.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I think she plans to write a whole series about about Greed's family. Because in the author's note, she details what she anticipates for the next three or four books, I think.
Okay. Cool.
There'll be one that is because Greed has a non-binary sibling, and there will be one with them. And then I think that there is going to be what another one about one of Greed's brothers. And that I think will be a male-male
Oh.
romance. So she's got plans.
Good.
Let's see. Greed, like, kind of breaks my heart a little bit when the book starts because he's so lonely. His ex, Agma, told her friends that he was a submissive and he wanted to be penetrated anally. And they later made fun of him. They scorned him and made him feel like an outcast. And so Greed feels a lot of shame and anxiety about being romantically with another person. And so he decides to go to the cult because he's lonely and he wants to find a companion, which was so brave of him. But it also makes me really sad for him that he felt so alienated by the other Demiurgus that he felt like he needed to do that. And also the way that it continues to show up with him being self-conscious throughout the book.
So something that I caught on this read that I didn't catch before. Okay, so when he's taking her away, I guess, right? She says, "Greed, tie your shoes." And he like looks at her and his ears flutter and stuff. And there's this pause and we don't get it from his point of view. But I was like, oh, I get why that is his reaction now.
Yeah.
But yeah, yes, I love Greed. But I feel so bad for him because Agma was terrible. And he kept, you know, then when he's with Beryl and he says, he brings Agma up a lot, but not in a bad way, just being like, oh, she didn't like this, or this was awkward, or she made fun of me for this. And Beryl gets so defensive of him, which, like, obviously, because he's the sweetest thing in the world. And yeah. Really, why be with someone if you're just going to make them feel bad about themselves?
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, look at what that does.
Mm-hmm.
Someone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're totally right. And when someone divulges something to you that's so personal, that's why. So I get super anxious about people sharing nudes just because you're assuming that that person is not going to show it to another person, I guess. That would be my assumption, but you don't have any control over what another person does. And so it requires a lot of vulnerability. And what we see with Greed is that he shared something that was super vulnerable with a person that he should have been able to trust.
Mm-hmm.
And they betrayed that. And that's so hard. And then that makes it hard to be vulnerable again.
Yep. Skittish. I feel like he's kind of skittish.
Yeah.
You know, from his trauma.
Yeah.
One of the things that I appreciated about him was, so when he and Beryl first moved in together, he had some feelings for her. He just felt a certain way, right? And he didn't say anything, you know, but he just felt a certain way. His stomach did funny things. Mm-hmm. But he specifically says, this can't go anywhere. I can't do anything. There's this power dynamic. I'm housing her. She doesn't have a job, you know. And I love seeing when characters are aware of that power dynamic. I feel like it's something that's often overlooked in just relationships in general. Like, even if you've, like, age gap relationships, you know, some relationships have power dynamics that are toxic. And I like that he recognizes that he could possibly influence her based on, you know, the fact that he's housing her and feeding her and all that. So he doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Both characters, I think, are really intentional about, like, acknowledging power dynamics or potential issues with power dynamics when they come in, and just, like, being really conscientious in their approach to their interactions with each other. They're very thoughtful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Beryl, too, when she realizes that he's a sub, you know, and she has conversations with him, but she doesn't come at him all at once.
Yes.
You know, she recognizes his limits, sort of. Like, oh, he's getting really uncomfortable, but we won't tackle the next uncomfortable thing. We'll stop here.
Yeah.
She's tuned into him in that way.
Yeah. So. I really like that. It's very, I mean, I feel like a lot of books, specifically romance books, like, capitalize on there being, like, drama in the relationship, like, unnecessary conflict, and, like, the miscommunication trope is really popular and I can't stand it. And we don't have that in this book. They're both very intentional in the way that they approach each other, which I love. And I feel like we should be that way in the romantic relationships, but also just like the other relationships that we have with people and being thoughtful.
I know. I think the first time I read this, I kept waiting for there to be some sort of conflict, like some other woman, other man, or some miscommunication. And it's so nice when there's not.
Yeah, it is really nice. Creed is also super into comfort items. I love that. He sleeps under layers and layers of blankets. He has a nest, like a fort, built in his living room for when he's having really bad days. And he dresses in a onesie and has backup onesies for comfort.
I think that's great.
I love it. This is the way to live.
I have blankets everywhere in my house and in my office, which I have a Snuggie. Because it gets cold and I want to be comfortable at my desk, so I put on a Snuggie.
I also have, oh, just tons of blankets. And there are times when I think I should get rid of some of these blankets, but I never do.
No.
And I probably won't. Because I love them.
Can't go wrong with blankets.
No, you can't.
I also, he has a bit of an addiction, I guess, to late night infomercials.
Yeah.
And he buys all of this stuff, and it's just like a funny, cute quirk, but also kind of dangerous, I suppose. He has, what did he get? The scrub shoes?
Yeah.
And they didn't work. And then the EB fo phones you put over your eyes.
Yeah, they're headphones for your eyes.
It's
Yeah.
just, it's very
I
entertaining.
mean, I think that's a very relatable human experience. If you haven't been sucked into an infomercial at some point, are you even human, right?
You know those TikTok pearl things? You seen the TikTok clam opening pearl things? Those.
No, what is that?
Okay. So it's these, well, most of them are guys, actually. So they're sitting and they just, you can buy certain types of pearls, right? And they open the clam like in front of you. And it's like, okay, this is your order, right? So it'll be like, Victoria's order. And they'll open the clams that you ordered and they'll be like, oh, look at this pretty pearl that came out. And they're actually, they're clams, and it's just how, they make pearls, right? You put a little like
Yeah.
shell under there or whatever. Oh God, I
Do you
spent so
get
much.
sucked in?
Oh my God, like hundreds of dollars. Be fair, it was over the course of like 6 months, and now I have no idea what to do with all of these pearls. I gave this, it really happened like twice in two big moments. That I gave the first ones all to my sister, and now I'm too ashamed to admit that I did it again.
Could you have them made into like a bracelet or a necklace or something?
Yes, I'm sure I could, but yeah, so
I mean, you can buy some thread from Michaels and do they have holes in them already?
no, you have to drill your own holes in them.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know how to do that. But maybe you can craft with them.
That's what I told my sister. I said, here are some pearls. Like, I don't know, put them on your clothes or like a poster or something for the boys.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do some crafting with them. And yeah, so now she has a bunch of pearls, and then I never gave her any more of the pearls after
Oh,
that
that's okay.
because.
When I was young, they used to, I think it was the ninja. It was when the ninja was like a new thing. And so I think it was a ninja. They would like grind up concrete just to show you how strong it was. They would just like dump blocks of concrete into this boulder and grind it up. Like, oh, they would make powdered sugar out of regular sugar. Captivating.
That I remember that one too. There was a very specific commercial though for it where it was a group of people. I guess these people just stayed over at their friend's house overnight because it's the next morning and the person's like, let me make you an omelet. And all
Oh,
of these people
yeah.
keep showing up, and there's this one woman who's like smoking and is really pessimistic. It's such a bizarre commercial looking back on it, but I remember watching that commercial.
Oh yes,
Yep.
it was a time. It was a wild time back
Why
when
were
the
all of
infant. I
those
guess,
people at their house?
yeah. I don't know if they still make infomercials like that.
Don't think they do, because I think there's too much like late night television now.
Anyway, this was a big old tangent. I but like those. I mean, yeah. I feel like those late night infomercials were a significant part of my childhood, though. Like the Carol Burnett show, that one was definitely one that I watched numerous times. Whatever. Anyway, I love how gentle Greed is with Beryl. Initially, when she agrees to leave the cult and go with him, once they realize they're on the same page, Beryl experiences an enormous amount of change all at once, and she has like a little identity crisis with confronting what it means to have lived in a cult for most of her life, and then worrying about how to interact in the world and get a job and make friends while also being afraid of being judged for having lived in a Demi Urgus worshiping cult, even though she didn't buy in. And so Greed does so much to comfort her and assure her, and he helps her get set up with technology, and he gives her a phone. He introduces her to junk food and gives her access to look for a job and buys weather appropriate clothing for her. And he also just spends time to her and is kind to her, which is wonderful. He's just so thoughtful and supportive as she tries to figure out what it means to be an adult. And when she has doubts and questions herself and worries about people, you know, judging her for being in a cult, he's so supportive.
He is. And he calls her brave, and hypes her up too. When
Yeah.
she's nervous about stuff. And it's just, yeah, he's supportive and sweet. And then just great.
Yeah. And then on the other side of that, Beryl is very accepting and supportive of Greed several times throughout, because he kind of talks down about himself sometimes, about like enjoying getting high and enjoying watching television a lot and not wanting to go out and socialize. Several times she assures him that he can do what he wants. He is an adult. He doesn't have to explain himself. If he wants to get high and watch infomercials, he can. And so she just gives him the assurance and the freedom to really be who he is.
Yeah, she says something along the lines of be like, it doesn't matter who else, who is to say what you're doing is not enough. If this is what you enjoy doing, then
Yeah.
this is what you enjoy doing. Nobody else can tell you it's not enough, sort of thing.
Exactly.
But he does have a lot of issues with self-esteem. He calls himself a goblin a lot, like a lanky goblin or an anxious goblin. And I find his social anxiety very relatable. There's a scene where he takes Beryl out into the city and he struggles with being in large crowds. He does it for Beryl. And again, this is one of the moments where she picks up on how he's feeling. She doesn't stay out for a really, really long time. She picks up on the fact that he's getting more and more anxious and is like, okay, well, let's go home. Been out here, I've seen some stuff. That's enough for today. Let's go home. And I completely understand getting that really overwhelming and like large crowds and the anxiety and like the jitters kind of that come with it, especially the longer you're out. And so to be with somebody who sees that, recognizes it, understands that, and is okay with it, and isn't just like, oh, come on, just a little bit longer, or suck it up,
Yeah.
as nice.
Yeah. And that's in contrast to his relationship with Agma. She wanted to go out and be with her friends or to socialize and be seen a lot, and that did not work well for him. That was very exhausting and anxiety inducing. And so Beryl doesn't pressure him to engage in social situations that he's uncomfortable with. They just have a very, I feel like, balanced approach to this relationship. He offers to go out with her at one point too. He offers to go out to to go with her, I think, when she goes out and meets Corva for the first time. So it's her first big girl social interaction. He offers to like hang around, and she, I think he does that, and she declines. He walks her to the place, and he walks her home, and he walks her to work and walks her home, but she doesn't pressure him to be in social situations that are uncomfortable, and she's not unkind to him. Oh, there's the scene where like his that actor, actress from the show that he really likes is in the bar that Beryl works in, and offers or says that she's going to come back if Greed wants to come and meet her. And he ultimately decides not to, and Beryl doesn't make him feel bad for not wanting to do that. She's just very understanding and kind and accepting of his social energy needs, which I think is important. Just because you have one person in a relationship who's super outgoing doesn't mean the person who is not that way should have to sacrifice their comfort to engage when they don't want to. There's a scene where he shifts into his other form. Is it a monster form? I can't remember what he called it.
I don't know if you called it a monster form, but yeah, I mean, I guess
Like
like
his are.
he gets a snout, right? Like that grows,
Yes.
his
Yeah.
claws get longer, he gets
Yeah.
bigger.
Yes. So he shifts into his other form and shows Beryl his like his underground room. And he starts out just jumping from rock to rock in it and then gets very excited. And it reminded me of a dog with the zoomies. It was so cute.
Yes. Doesn't his mom call it the zoomies?
Oh, I don't remember.
Yeah,
But
he says
that's
something
what
like, oh,
it's
my
like.
mom used to call these the zoomies or something. And it's so true because that was my thought too. It was just, starts out slow and then, whoo, if
Yes.
you've ever seen it,
Yes. The zoomies is so cute.
Yeah.
And then there's another scene where Beryl has started her period and Greed offers to go to the store and buy pads for her. And so he FaceTimes her to try to figure out what pads to get her. That scene is adorable. It's so cute.
I love when he sees adult diapers and he's like, oh, these look environmentally friendly. Do you want some of these?
Yeah, it's so cute. There's a whole
It's
conversation
great.
about wings. Do you need the organic ones? Yeah, it's adorable. I really appreciated the period representation in this book as well. It seems like women in romance novels magically never get periods, never have to poop, never get yeast infections or UTIs. They don't ever fart. Like, they're magic. And so I think that it's nice to have a female main character who's having a period, and it's got like it's not like she has a period and we never talk about it again. Like, it takes up a significant part of the story. And I know part of the fantasy of like reading fictional novels is that women magically don't get yeast infections, but it is nice to read when something that actually happens to human people shows up in a book. Because periods are normal and they're not unclean or disgusting, and they're just as much a part of everybody's lives. And so, yeah, normalize them. Talk about them. Greed has some unique penis variations. First of all, his penis is gigantic.
Sounds heavy.
Yes. It makes an audible thumping sound when it's erect and lands on his stomach. She says he's been walking around with a third leg in his pants this whole time. And so in terms of like length, she says that he is around 7 feet tall in his human form. And when his penis is erect, it stretches up above his navel. Like, I'm trying to measure with my forearm right now. That's like probably longer than my forearm because I'm not 7 feet tall. It's ginormous. And then I mean, like, it's barbed. And even without the barbs, getting railed by a penis this long would be a life ender, I feel like, for a human. But it has barbs on it. And I wish that she had included a picture of this, because Beryl watches porn to try to understand Demiurgus cocks and says that the barbs are arranged in different configurations for different people. And when erect, the barbs stick out about a quarter of an inch. And then with orgasm, the barbs shoot out and are half an inch long.
Oof.
No thanks.
No, that sounds painful.
Horrifying.
Yeah.
Very un I'll stick to nodding. I'm good.
Also
Like,
to the vibrating penises.
yes, yeah. The click is Were they Clicanians?
Wasn't it the Horde King that
Yes,
had
it's the
the
Horde Kings, yeah. Yes, that had the vibrating knob above their penis. I'll stick to that variation. I don't want anything to do with this. Like, they're barbed and uncomfortable just to touch. He talks about them snagging on his clothes and it like grazing her hand and being, and apparently the vaginas of Demiurgus women are very resilient, and it's not painful and it doesn't hurt them to be penetrated by this, but wow.
No. Not human compatible.
No, definitely not. I really appreciate, so there were numerous sex scenes in this book, and they were terrific for a lot of reasons. Beryl and Greed negotiate boundaries. So you were talking about like their power dynamics earlier, and I think that we see this come into play really nicely in the sex scenes as well, with a lot of just awareness about their relationship. So they negotiate boundaries. And Greed says that he's not interested in pain, only in pleasure. And so Beryl is very intentional about honoring that. They create a safe word, and consent is ongoing during all of their scenes. There's also a lot of kink representation in this story. So we have dom sub dynamics, with Beryl figuring out how to dom and Greed subbing. And then we also have bondage, orgasm denial, we have edging, we have analingus, we have Beryl penetrating Greed with a giant pink Demiurgus dildo, and we have praise kink.
It was all great.
It was all great, and there was so much of it represented. It was terrific. I enjoy seeing Beryl leaning into femdoming, and then the care and thought that she put into her scenes with Greed, and also the aftercare.
That's always important. I feel like books can skim over that
Definitely.
sometimes too.
I think it's really important to be thoughtful when you're approaching. I mean, if you are approaching any new thing, a lot of times you're going to do some research for that. So why would that be any different if you were approaching something new sexually? We should be intentional about these things. We should do research, negotiating consent, negotiating power dynamics, even when it comes to things like bondage. Okay, what do you want to be restrained with? Hands? Are we okay with that? Do we want to use handcuffs? Do we want to use rope? What kind of rope? Do you not want to be restrained anywhere in particular? There's a lot that has to go in with, and then being able to communicate, like, is this too tight? Is this too loose? What do you need?
Having a safe word,
Having
right?
a safe word, yes. Those are all things that need to be considered. And so we see Beryl doing the work and being very thoughtful. Also, just being very intentional when she's trying not to create painful sensations for Greed, like being careful about grabbing his hair, not pulling too hard. I just think it's a very well written approach to incorporating kink in a relationship. The aftercare part of that is so important too. Beryl makes sure that Greed is okay. She gives him water. She takes care of his wrists after he's been handcuffed.
It bothers me when like books when they are BDSM and stuff and they have no aftercare like that. Gosh, that one I read where it was like Midnight Cinderella or something. No aftercare, and it was a degradation kink on top of that. And
Oh, that's
then no
bad.
aftercare, and he would like leave her crying.
Oh, no.
This is not.
That's
But
not
that's
it.
sort of
That's
what
bad.
I feel like can totally happen in one of those things where if you try to enter the world without researching what's needed, right? You just kind of end up with some of that stuff, I feel like.
Yeah. Greed and Beryl's first real prolonged sex scene in this book is a jerk-off instruction scene, which, like I said, I've never read that in a book before. And that's amazing. So Beryl positions herself behind Greed and she gives him instructions to masturbate for her and she edges him a lot. And then there's another scene where she talks to him to come into her room to make no sound and to eat her out until she tells him to stop. And then we have another scene with pegging, which also made me really happy because, again, there's so much thought that Beryl puts into approaching this scene, like stretching his anus with her fingers before donning the dildo and then checking on him throughout. And I also really like that she talks about not being sure what she's doing and being nervous about being the person who's doing the penetrating and finding her rhythm and things like that. I just really enjoyed every scene that we got to see with these characters.
I mean, there was so much in it, right?
Yeah.
And not only are there so many variations in it, there's also all the kind of behind the scenes, right? Because there's STI testing and stuff discussed, which is something, again, sort of like seeing a period in a book. It's very real world, right? These are important things.
Yes. Beryl is super self-conscious about people finding out that she was part of a cult and judging her for it, which is part of what makes her so defensive of Greed. Being made to feel bad for things that are beyond your control or for who you are is terrible, regardless of the circumstances, right? And so she frets a lot in the story about how she'll make friends, if she even can make friends, if she can't tell people who she is. She worries about people asking or finding out about her history. And then after she's been working at the bar Abyss for a while, she has a confrontation with Agma, Greed's ex, and she lays into her for violating his privacy by sharing his personal information about his sexuality with her friends. And it's a really great scene because she's so powerful in this confrontation. She really stands up for him, and we kind of get the vibe that she's standing up for herself too. Her boss, Manny, witnesses it and talks with Beryl about it. And she reveals that she's known since Beryl started working at the bar that she was part of a cult and that she doesn't judge her for it. And that she understands that making a new start is hard, and she just wanted to help her. And it's a really important scene for Beryl because she realizes that she can be accepted for who she is, including her past, just as she accepts Greed for who he is. It's hard sometimes for us to give ourselves the same like grace and kindness that we have for other people and that we show for other people. It's hard sometimes to believe that we can be accepted even though we accept other people for who they are. Beryl tells Greed that she loves him like right after that scene, and it's precious. He's like, so he's been at home. Beryl leaves work early. He's been at home eating Chinese food in his onesie, and she walks in and he's like, this is the big moment in the rom-com movies, and I'm in my onesie with Chinese food stains on it.
I know.
He's so cute. He like hits his shin on a coffee table when he stumbles to get up, and she's like, I'm sorry, I know I probably made you really nervous.
Yes. And he's so cute. He thought about her, what, getting up on the bar too and making this announcement
Yeah.
that she was in love with him. And she's like, I can. Come back with me. I'll do it.
Yeah.
That's so cute.
They're so sweet. So that scene with Agma was like the only like high stakes type of scene, I guess, or the conflict scene in the story, which was nice. I mean, it's really just a terrific love story. At the end of the book, it's Christmas. Greed and Beryl have been living happily ever after. They got a dog, and they're going to Greed's mother's house for Christmas. And Beryl meets Greed's brother, Noonie, who is one of the worst at picking on him. And Beryl is immediately in Greed's corner and sticking up for him. And I just loved that. Noonie calls Greed Grode. It's a hateful
Oh, yeah.
nickname. And so Noonie, Beryl comes up with Poonie to call Noonie. It's just great.
Is. It was a cute little way to wrap up the book too, especially seeing them with the it's a dog, but not a dog, right? It's like a
No, I think it's a dog.
Is it a
It's just a
dog?
big dog.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Especially because they brought up that cat versus dog conversation
Oh, yeah.
earlier in it, which is cute.
I would love to see, I don't think she has plans to do this, but I would really love to see a book for Greed's mother, Una.
Oh, yeah.
She talks, so she's super nosy and involved and a little bit overbearing in her kid's life, but she talks to him when she first meets Beryl about, and they haven't even gotten together at that point, but about how sex isn't everything in a relationship and they can still do it. And she makes a comment like, I would know, I haven't had sex in forever. I would love to see a relationship between her and somebody else
Yeah.
and the way that her kids respond to it. I think that would be a terrific story.
I agree. Maybe you will get that.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about her quotes.
Yes.
So, I picked a quote from an interaction between Beryl and Greed where they're negotiating part of their sexual relationship. And Beryl says, penetrative sex doesn't define a relationship. At the end of this book, in the author notes, Lily Mayne says, my goal was to try to show Beryl finding someone who didn't place her worth as a woman, sexual partner, and romantic partner on whether she can be penetrated. And I think this is so important. There are a lot of folks with painful sex related to vaginismus and for other reasons not related to vaginismus, and they can't tolerate penetrative sex. And their relationships will end sometimes because they don't have a partner who is willing to explore alternatives, or who is empathetic and understanding to their needs. And people with painful sex are worthy of understanding partners. They are worthy of partners who don't expect them to put themselves in pain just so that they can pleasure their partner.
So my quote is, this is a thought that Greed has. He says, for her, I could withstand an evening out in the city. Because it's her, I wanted to. And this is actually similar to a conversation that I had with someone earlier this week. But there's a big difference between just sucking it up and doing it because your partner wants to do it versus doing it because you love your partner. It's something that they enjoy. You want to see them enjoy it and just to spend time with them, right? Like, even if it's just to run errands, you know, a person be like, I want to spend time with you. I'll come with you just that we can hang out while we do these things. I just think that's important.
I agree, and I think you're right. It is important. Okay. Well, that wraps up Berries and Greed by Lily Mayne. Join us next time. We'll be discussing The Atlas Paradox by Olivia Blake.
Thank you for listening to Literary Quest. We hope you enjoyed our episode. If you'd like to follow us on social media, we can be found at Literary Quest Podcast on Instagram or Facebook. You're also welcome to share your thoughts and ideas with us via email at literarycuestpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again.